Today, Veterans Day is a day we give thanks and gratitude to those who have served the country. We often picture a veteran as wearing camouflage and fatigues or the crisp blues of a Navy uniform. But many others are also risking their lives at times of war, from cooks to mechanics to medics. Sergeant Warren Blaylock was a combat medic in the 67th Evacuation Hospital during World War II. Drafted when he was 21, he trained for nearly a year in various locations in Massachusetts and Virginia, learning how to quickly put up and take down the hospital tents, set up the equipment, acquiring the skills to bandage and care for injured soldiers at the same time. In 1942, Blaylock, who now lives in Alma, went to New York to board the Queen Mary, the ship that took him and other members of the 67th Evacuation Hospital through a six-day trip to Scotland. He remembers the only thing he was fed that trip, breaded tomatoes, something he hasn't liked since. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas recently spoke with Warren Blaylock, and he told her the story of his arrival in Europe and what happened beyond.
We rode the train all day and got down into England then, and to a little town called Dursley, D-U-R-S-L-E-Y. But there were troops coming from everywhere to be in England. There were about 3 million extra troops there over the normal population. So you lived in every little, the nurses and the doctors lived in private homes. They'd private person take in one doctor and have another person in the house, so they let them stay in there. And that first night, well, it went on for longer than that, maybe a month or so. We were in a loft, in a barn. We went up an outside stairway, and we were in the barn up there. But underneath, it was a pub, which is a saloon. And so at night, the people come in down there, and you'd hear them singing and drinking.
Were you allowed to sing and drink, too?
If we wanted to, and we... but no one wanted to. We were there for that. There were no stores open. They just had empty cardboard boxes in all the windows advertising something, but they were empty because it had no merchandise of any kind.
Right, because there was a war going on.
Yes. And so we spent some time there waiting for the... invasion of Normandy, indeed waiting for D-Day. So we were there about, I'd say, 4 months while we waited for the at which we were loaded on trucks and taken down to the English Channel nearby. They take us straight to the Channel, but they took us down there. And we were going to be in the first invasion in Normandy. Well, we didn't get in the first invasion, and it was an uncomfortable time waiting around there.
So you were literally just waiting?
Yeah, just waiting. So I would do. Evidently, it was there was a, of course, there had to be. There was a program of who goes next and who goes next in invasion there. So we waited around, I think, like 5 or 6 hours before it came our time to go. And we were in a barge. It was just a big ship that was just a box with a motor on the end of it, just for transporting soldiers over there to Normandy. And when they did, when the soldiers would get unloaded, and there were a lot of them doing this, a lot of boxes and tree hips and all. And when we got over there, and we got off on the invasion there, soldiers that had been wounded would be put back on that boat and sent back to England. But there were no medics. They just had combat medics to take care of them until that time.
Like you?
No, we were beyond the combat medic. A combat medic would be... the first thing they'd see, combat medic was along with the army, the soldiers, and somebody got his hand shot. He yelled for a medic, and so this was on the front line of what was happening there. It was said that if a soldier was wounded and he got to a hospital in 15 minutes, he had a 90% chance of survival. And so we set up our hospital, and we had practiced so many times that we could set up our hospital tents for in an hour. Get all our equipment in there and electricity over here that comes off of a trailer we have with her, and another trucks with Taylor, they were hauling water, and we had a kitchen in that went with us too, and the motor pool, we had trucks and those things that would be needed for transport, jeeps. We followed the front lines as it went along, and they get up as much as 5 or 6 or 7 miles away from us, then we would close down for a half a day and move forward and put up again close to the front line, so they'd have a shorter distance to get to come to in order to get medical treatment.
Well, during that move, did the injured have another place to go?
There were, if we needed it, it would be another hospital would leapfrog us and step in there. But most of the time, no, we didn't need it because we could take it down in an hour, go where we want to, and put it back up in an hour. And so they were waiting, shall I say, for us at that particular time. And too, one of my responsibilities was to go ahead and find a place to set up the hospital. So that was our main effort, was to taking care of the wounded just as soon as we can. If they just had a small wound but couldn't go back in the front line, we'd send him on back and he'd recuperate maybe 3 or 4 days back behind us back there. But sometimes they would be so severely wounded that they would have to be, after we'd stabilized them, they would have to go back maybe 30 or 40 miles to a station hospital, which was, if it was bad enough, they might be sent by ship back to America, or they could be sent over to England where they had a station hospital there. I was disappointed that I didn't get into the National Guard or something where I could carry a rifle and, you know, shoot the enemy down here. But after I had been working there, I began to see that I had a valuable place in the life of the military, because I was sending a father or a mother, a father or an uncle or a son home that might not have been able to go home because of the injury. So I felt I was really doing a good thing for the people back home. I was going to send them somebody instead of leaving them over to lay in a ditch and die or something. We were going to get them up and hopefully get them ready to go back home.
Do you have any idea how many people you saw and were able to send home?
No. The first 24 hours we were there on the beaches there, first time we set up, in the first 24 hours, we had over 4,000 individuals that we either that had to have some kind of medical treatment. Now, to back up a little bit, when we landed on the beaches there, and they told us first thing you do is dig a foxhole there. But there had been other troops ahead of us because we were 4 or 5 days behind the initial invasion. And there were some foxholes along there already. So everybody was dig your foxhole. Well, when I got mine finished, I went down the line to see. I was a sergeant in charge there. I went down the line to see that everybody had their foxhole there. And by the time I got down to the end, I heard the anti-aircraft guns firing and knew by the sound that there was airplanes coming. And just immediately, German planes came over strafing where we were there in the foxhole. Well, I couldn't get back to my foxhole where I was far away, but there was one kind of long there, like somebody was going to lay down in. So I just dived into that one to lay down. When I did, somebody came in on top of me. I had gotten in his foxhole. Well, the words he used to describe me, I thought they were French or German or something. I didn't recognize them. A good thing I didn't. But finally, when I got to where I could turn and look around, it was one of my own men from Van Buren, Arkansas, that was with us, and that just happened to be his foxhole he dug in that particular way. But after the war was over and we both came back, Alm and Van Buren close enough that we could visit and talk and laugh about some of the things that happened there.
During the war, Warren Blaylock traveled to Belgium, Luxembourg, Czechoslovakia, and eventually into Germany. In all, Blaylock was overseas for 2 years. The first part of World War II, he says, was much more intense than the latter part, and he remembers being very busy for his 12-hour shifts. We're going to hear more from Sergeant Warren Blaylock, including his remembrance of the Battle of the Bulge, in just a moment on this edition of Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. As a medic in the 67th Evacuation Hospital during World War II, Sergeant Warren Blaylock says he saw all kinds of injuries, from horrible burns to wounds that required amputations. As we return to Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas's conversation with Warren Blaylock, he recalls one soldier's wounds that 70 years later continue to haunt him.
I mean, I remember a couple of them that were unusual. One that was a soldier came in, and he was holding his intestines in his hands, and I could see his heart beating in the open part of his stomach there. But he was that particular person that I remember wasn't complaining any more than anyone else. And then another unusual thing, a native there in the wherever we happened to be, I don't remember where it was, either in France or somewhere there, a civilian brought his daughter in, and she had been injured by a shell fragment, and she was pregnant, and we delivered the baby by cesarean operation, and everything worked out fine for him.
The girl survived, and the baby
survived too. Yes.
Well, it didn't bother you to see those kind of things? You just kind of went into kind of work mode
It didn't bother me at all. Yeah. Didn't bother me at all. We used one type of material to put everybody to sleep, and that's sodium pentothal. That one kind was all we'd use. And so what we'd do when somebody would bring in a wounded man, we'd lay his arm out here, and on a board, wrap it up, and here in the elbow, we would put a needle in there and start the sodium pentothal running in there. Say, now you count to 10. Well, they'd get about 8, and they'd gone to sleep. And you just lay the syringe over in his hand there, made a perfect place for it. Sometimes, a longer one, they might say, doctor say, well, he's going to have a little more here. He's waking up. And she just pick it up and push a little more into the vein.
So you're over there for 24 months.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember where you were and how you felt when they said the war's over and you can go home?
Before that, there was a time there. That was the Battle of the Bulge. We were in Belgium, I believe it was, Malmedy, Belgium. And we were in a boys' school, had a big brick fence all the way around it and about 4 stories high, and one entranceway. And the bottom floor was hospital. You'd have different rooms, and you'd have one room would be surgery, and one room would be x-ray and other things like that. The second floor was the doctors and nurses living up there. And the third floor were enlisted men living up there.
And that's where you were.
That's
where,
huh? And it was in December, I'm thinking this is right, December of 19 and 44. And we happened to notice that the street, the highway that ran in front of us, the people, civilians, were walking, all going in one direction, going west. And they were pushing baby carriages or a wheelbarrow or leading a cow or something. I said, where's all these people going? So somebody went out and asked them, and they said, the Germans are coming. The Germans are coming. We could hear the guns, big guns, that were in the distance, and they hadn't been. We could hear them closer. So that was the beginning of the Battle of the Bulge. Hitler had accumulated 35 divisions, and he had them all lined out up in about a 50-mile line, and he was going west, fixing to go west with those. And that was the Battle of the Bulge. Bulge meaning the shape of the era in which they were fighting at that time. But we got real busy when we discovered that the Germans were coming on the Battle of the Bulge here. Those people were all trying to get away from the army, because the Germans took no prisoners. If they took one prisoner, had to have one man to guard him. Well, they didn't have that man to spare. So it would be best just if you took a prisoner, just to shoot him. Mm-hmm. So there was, in wintertime, December the 16th or the 18th, somewhere along in there, and there was a big snow on the ground, like 18 inches deep or something. And so when we were traveling here in the Battle of the Bulge, you might see a body lying out there in the snow. You didn't know whether that was a German or American or what it was, but it just lay in the snow. Some individual did.
But you just had to leave him, right? I mean, you didn't.
Yeah, yeah. We had our orders what to do over here, mm-hmm. and these were probably killed or wounded. And going in, the Germans didn't keep anyone. We could not pull back, even though we knew they were coming, until we got the information from headquarters. And it didn't say retreat. We didn't retreat. We pulled back, as a more gracious way of saying it. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we got orders to pull back. So we, of course, just left all our equipment, all our supplies and everything on there, just trying to get the human beings out. Loaded all the doctors and the nurses and all the patients that were able to go, and loaded them on trucks to go out. And so while we were doing this, Captain came up to me and he said, Blaylock, we have 23 wounded people that are too critically wounded to move them. And said, we're going to have to leave them here. And I'd like to have 6 men to stay with them. Well, I said,
because you were a sergeant. You were a sergeant.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was. And I said, well, I'm a single man. I'll stay, and I'll get 5 more people to stay with me. So I asked for volunteers, and I got 4, and I had to draft the 5th one. He never did like me after that, because you didn't know what was going to happen to you. And so that, about just about dark, Captain came over and shook hands with me. He said, Blaylock, been nice knowing you. But I don't see you again. That was hard.
I went back.
Because I knew the Germans weren't taking any prisoners. They all pulled out, went down the road, down the highway, and left. So, well, that night, of course, we didn't sleep any. You could hear the firing going not too far away.
And you didn't have any sort of weapons or anything yourself?
Well, we were not trained in that.
Yeah.
No, we were not trained in that. But the next morning, about 8 o'clock, the trucks came back in. They came down the highway. One truck was shot up, and they left it. Came back, and he said, Blaylock, we're going to take these men out. Said they can either die on a German bayonet, or they can die on a truck, and I'd rather die on a truck.
Eventually, the tide did turn. Germany retreated, and the war did end. Blaylock returned to his home on Highway 71 in Alma, where today he lives on the same land he was born on. He went to business school at the University of Arkansas, where he taught accounting for a few years, going on to co-own a foam rubber company in Van Buren, supplying furniture companies with padding. He was also a cattleman and auctioneer. At 92 years of age, Warren Blaylock is sharp as a tack, an active member of Rotary in Fort Smith, and he loves to research the area's history and tell the stories.
So from being born in a one-room long cabin to seeing a man on the moon, I have seen life change and how it has grown and developed and all the things that have taken place. It's been such an interesting life,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not ready to quit yet.
Yeah. Oh, you're just moving right along. Sure are. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Warren Blaylock, who now lives in Alma, talked to Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas inside the Carver Center for Public Radio at KUAF last week. A special Veterans Day edition of Crawford County Chronicle Speaker Series, presented by the Dren and Scott Historic Site, will feature Warren Blaylock, a World War II veteran and Bronze Star recipient. The talk is tonight at the King Opera House in Van Buren, following the Veterans Day Parade on Main Street in Van Buren. The talk is scheduled to begin around 6:30. Seating is open house. It's free to the public. If you'd like more information about tonight's event, 262-2750. This is Ozarks at Large.